Religious groups in the U.S. get roughly $82 billion in tax exemptions annually. That figure comes from the Washington Post back in 2013. Exempting houses of worship from paying taxes has long been a core principle in the separation of church and state. But religious institutions must comply with the law to maintain this status. So why, after revelations of decades of sexual abuse in the church, are so many still exempt? Rob Boston is a senior advisor at Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a nonpartisan advocacy group that works to keep the principle that church and state should remain separate in the U.S. Rob, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
So let's do a little history first. When did this country decide that religious institutions should not pay taxes?
Well, you know, we didn't actually have anything like an income tax in the United States until 1913. There had been a previous attempt in 1894 to institute a tax like that, but the Supreme Court struck it down. But even that early effort did contain language stating that charitable institutions, which is interpreted to include houses of worship, would be exempt. So it's been with us for quite a while.
What about, I thought Jesus said that we should render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, you know, give the state their cut.
There may be language like that in religious books, but of course, our government is not based on any particular religious perspective. Our Constitution is secular. So we've tended to look at this question, I think, from the perspective of what works for us as a society. And tax exemption, remember, it isn't just given to houses of worship. It is granted to a wide array of charitable, scientific, educational organizations, museums, hospitals, schools. I do believe that if it were only applied to houses of worship, that would create a problem because it would be an example of special treatment of religion, which the Constitution does mitigate against.
Why can't a church, say, just work by the same rules as a nonprofit and then apply for nonprofit status instead of having this special religious tag?
Well, it's interesting, actually. Houses of worship don't have to apply for nonprofit status. They do get that benefit. They are assumed to be nonprofit and tax exempt as soon as they spring into existence. Now, this isn't widely known, but the IRS does have a set of standards that they look at to determine if a house of worship is legitimate. In other words, you wouldn't want somebody just, you know, opening up a few seats in his garage, claiming he's a church, and then trying to get a tax exemption. There are cases, however, where the IRS has moved against fake entities or people using tax exemption as a cover for profit-generating businesses and so on. I'll admit that it's not terribly common, but it does happen in cases of blatant abuse.
But it doesn't seem to be happening in terms of blatant abuse when religious institutions, should they continue to get that tax exemption when there are issues of rampant abuse or even criminality?
That's really separate from the question of tax exemption. I think what we need to do in that case is simply have a more aggressive stance on the part of law enforcement that will advocate for these victims. If a secular corporation had done some of these activities that the hierarchy of the Catholic Church did, they would be in prison. So people are pressing for that. I think that's starting to happen. I know in New York State, a law was passed that extends the statute of limitations that allows people to get into the civil courts and try to find justice. But that is really separate from the question of tax exemption.
Do we have a sense of how many of these institutions really need the exemption? You know, what would be the financial impact for some of these churches if they did have to pay?
Well, that is an interesting question. I think a lot of us will hear stories about these ridiculous TV preachers who have, you know, six houses and a fleet of cars and a jet, and they're living this high-flying lifestyle and they're tax exempt. That does happen, and it's disturbing. But if you think about it, the average church in this country, the average temple or synagogue, is usually a fairly modest congregation, not very large, doesn't generate a lot of money. So if you were to revoke tax exemption as a way of punishing some of those people who are abusing it, it would affect everybody down the line. It would also affect all the nonprofits out there that are working on issues like the environment, peace, justice. Even my own organization, we're tax exempt. It would affect museums, schools, scientific organizations, literary organizations, right down the line. So while the idea, I think, has some appeal to people on the surface, we have to step back and think about what would really happen if we were to put it into place. It would be an extremely significant change in the way we've done things for a long time.
Rob Boston is a senior advisor at America United. Rob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.